Nihao Dongshenmen, and welcome to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, RBN, republicbroadcasting.org. It's your turkey of free speech, because it's Thanksgiving, maybe. And so be thankful. Be thankful for RBN, because without RBN, everything would suck. So go to republicbroadcasting.org. Click on the donate button. Send the badly needed fundage, and we will thank you. We will thank you. Okay, so today is whatever day it is. It may be Thanksgiving. In fact, it probably is Thanksgiving. And we have with us Kato. Kato, thank you.
Thank you for giving me this platform to speak. Well, it's not Thanksgiving Day yet, because, you know, the show is going out on Tuesday, so if we were recording this on Thanksgiving Day, then it was being broadcasted on Tuesday. Well, there's a... I don't think time travel is a thing yet, so...
Yeah.
This is not a time day. But it is Thanksgiving week, and, you know, despite everything that's going on in the West, in the United States, you know, around the world, there's... Still a lot to be thankful for. You know, we still got family and friends, and we still got this show. We still got a way to get our voice out there. They haven't fully gone to, you know, completely shut everything down yet, even though the Jews are in a scramble to shut everybody down. But, it's, you know, we still got lots to be thankful for. And, I know that, last week I said on the show that we were going to talk about a series of, articles by this, one of the contributors to the Underview, Larry Romanoff, who is a Russian-Canadian living in China, where he talks about the death cult of democracy and talking about how democracy is the deadliest cult. I said we were going to talk about that, but more, urgent and, pressing things have come up, so we'll have to save that for another time. Of course, that was, last week, while at the same time, while we were discussing the shenanigans of the 2022 election and the fraud, the obvious fraud in states like Arizona and elsewhere, the G20 summit was taking place. And there were a couple interesting things we saw at G20, such as, you know, Biden meeting with President Xi Jinping for the first time, and then, of course, President Xi Jinping giving a rebuke to that fag Trudeau for spewing complete fake news to the mainstream media.
So there's a lot there. The G20 meeting is important. The G20 is actually important. Just before we go there, I will say, just I want to say a word about being thankful. And, you know, I say this not just in late November, but I'll say it year-round when people ask how I'm doing or, you know, how's my family doing. And I'll say, you know, honestly, we're doing well, and I'm very thankful for it, because you're not going to do well forever, right? I mean, eventually, bad things happen, and when you're not in the middle of, and you know, it, like, you can look around the world, and you can see lots of bad things, but when things are going well, you got to be really, really thankful, because at some point, they're not going to go well, and even when they don't go well, they could go worse. And there was a movie, I don't know if you've ever heard of this movie, Kato, called Young Frankenstein. Did you ever hear of Young Frankenstein?
I've never seen it, but I'm sure it's probably related to Frankenstein.
Yeah, yeah. And it's honestly, it's very Jewish. I don't remember who the producer or director is. But I do remember Gene Wilder, who was Jewish. He played Frankenstein. He'd also played Willy Wonka in Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, if you're familiar with that movie. But
Frankenstein, that was a Jewish name, you know, Stein. So,
yeah, yeah. And there were references to that. But there was one scene where Dr. Frankenstein and Igor, although his name was pronounced Igor in the movie, they were digging up a grave. I guess they were looking for dead bodies to experiment on. And it was really, really bad. And Dr. Frankenstein was complaining, and Igor said, well, could be worse. How could it possibly be worse? Well, it could be raining. And then immediately it started raining very, very hard.
So I guess it was like a comet almost.
Yeah. And so, when things are going well, you got to be thankful that they're going well. And when things aren't going well, at least it's not raining. You know, you got to be thankful for it. Things could be worse.
Oh, it's like, yeah, I mean, if things aren't going well, things aren't going well. You know, there's, unfortunately, there's really not much individually we can do about it. But, you know, there's always people out there who have it a lot worse. I mean, I will say, I mean, even though for all my, you know, contentions talking about, you know, the U.S. and the American Empire on this show, I'm very thankful that I'm in the United States and not in Europe right now because of the winter that's the biting winter that's about to fall over Europe, especially Germany and all the Nordic countries. Now that they have no affordable heating anymore, thanks to the, I think they said the UK Navy destroying the Nord Stream pipeline, amongst many other things. So. That's something to be thankful for, that we're in the U.S. and not in Europe.
Yeah, thanks. So all these self-inflicted problems. Okay, but getting back to the G20. So G20, what is the G20? Well, people have probably heard of the G7, and that's a different organization. And the G7 has its origins, I guess, 1975, I think, was the first meeting. It could have been 76. It was during the Ford administration. First meeting was in Puerto Rico, I believe. And it was just kind of an impromptu meeting of United States, UK, France, West Germany, and Japan, those five countries. And then the next year, they decided to bring along Canada and Italy as well. And it became institutionalized as the G7. So it would be a meeting of the presidents and prime ministers, but then there would also be, usually before that meeting, they would have a meeting of the finance ministers and maybe the heads of the central banks. And it became very institutionalized. For a while, it became the G8. Do you know who the eighth country was when the G7 became the eighth?
Yeah, it was Russia.
It was Russia, yeah. And actually, I guess even the Soviet Union might have been in one the very last year. Because things had gotten better, and I think Gorbachev might have attended one. Although they only had the G8 for the heads of state. They did not have, invite the Russian finance minister or central bank head to the financial meetings. And then eventually, when the Jews got mad at Putin, they kicked Russia out of the G8 and went back to being the G7. But that's just, you know, that's very Western, right?
Western plan.
The G20, right. The G20, trying to think when the first one was. I know they had one in America in 2009, shortly after Obama was elected. There might have been one the year before. I can't remember. But the G20, the whole idea of the G20 was that there were a lot of big emerging economies that weren't Western. And there was a need to have a genuine global meeting of leading economies. And by that time, a lot of leading economies were not Western. And obviously, China was big. Russia was big. India is big. And there are some others that, like Turkey and Indonesia, that are fair-sized countries. Brazil, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so these meetings, because it's not just allies, just these seven so-called allies, but really all dominated by Zio America, because you've got, it's a genuine global meeting. There's a lot of things, important things that can happen there that would not happen at a G7 meeting. So let's get into it. So tell us about the meeting between, the fun one. Let's have the little meeting between Xi Jinping and Trudeau Castro.
Yeah, so that happened, that was a couple of days after the, you know, the big one between, you know, China and the United States Empire. So Trudeau, so here's the thing about Trudeau. I mean, he's a tyrant. He's one of those, you know, tiny little tyrants who wants to oppress, you know, his own people, like we saw with the Canadian, the violent crackdown on the Canadian truckers, you know, who were peacefully protesting freedom. you know, I mean, he's this tiny little faggot on the world stage. And the thing is, the other, you know, leaders of other countries, they don't respect him. They don't like that, you know, they look at the guy and they just think, you know, basically what he is. The thing with him is he does everything he can to try to get the attention of other world leaders, you know, to come and meet with him and talk with him, but they just don't care about him because, I mean, he's nothing. He's a nobody on the world stage, you know, especially compared to the United States. But what happened was, you know, President Xi Jinping, he's got a schedule of meetings and people he's going to talk to, and one of them was you know, Joe Biden. And at the G20 summit, you know, during one of the intermissions, Trudeau goes up to President Xi Jinping and just starts talking to him. And, you know, President Xi Jinping, he's a very professional man, you know, very respectable, you know, very polite. And, you know, he talks with Trudeau, you know, during the intermission, and it's not an official meeting. So then Trudeau goes to the, after they're done, Trudeau goes to the Canadian media, the mainstream media in Canada, and says, "See, I met with President Xi Jinping and we discussed these matters about this, this, and this." And that's not what happened. They just had it was just a break, and Trudeau was the one that went up to President Xi Jinping, and President Xi Jinping just, you know, didn't want to be rude. So he listened, and then Trudeau goes and says, "Oh, this was an official meeting." Well, obviously that's not appropriate and that's not acceptable. I mean, that's just outright lie. So later on, in one of the other intermissions, President Xi Jinping goes back and confronts Trudeau again and basically says, "What you said to the mainstream media, that was not acceptable and that was not appropriate, and what you said was wrong." Basically gave Trudeau a strong rebuke in front of the entire world. Like, President Xi Jinping just humiliated Trudeau. And
in front of TV cameras, right? That's the thing. It was in front of TV cameras.
Yeah.
And I think Tucker Carlson, among others, played it live or played it on their shows.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wait, who played it?
I think I saw it on Tucker Carlson's show. I know I saw it, and I'm almost positive it was on Tucker Carlson's show.
Mm-hmm.
So it was funny.
Yeah, it was hilarious. I mean, he just totally owned. Trudeau got totally owned by President Xi Jinping. He basically said everything that we discussed was leaked to the media, and that was not appropriate. And that's not how the conversation went, and just, you know, strongly rebuked Trudeau, and Trudeau tries to defend himself. He gets all defensive and, you know, interrupts President Xi's translator by saying, you know, he basically says, he says, "Oh yeah, well, you know, we believe in free," you know, just the usual liberal, you know, Western liberal jibber jabber about, you know, we gotta, you know, we had disagreements and we should, you know, work together and you know, talk about him. And then President Xi Jinping, you can see his body language. He's just totally not interested. And just, you know, he's not even looking at him when Trudeau was trying to
defend himself. He's not looking at him. And he's turning his body so he's not even facing him. But he's talking. And then, of course, his translator talks at Trudeau. But,
yeah, and President Xi Jinping, he ends and he just says, "That's fine." He basically, whatever that you know, mumbo jumbo that Trudeau was saying, President Xi Jinping just says, "That's great, but let's set the conditions first." Meaning, you know, let's first do it. Basically, he's telling him, like, you know, yeah, I mean, this is inappropriate, and, you know, you have to set a meeting first, make it official. So, and he basically just told him to screw off.
If they want to have informal talks, have informal talks, but then don't leak it to the press, what's said. That really was a major breach of protocol.
Yeah, it was a huge breach of protocol, and then at the end, President Xi Jinping, he just says, "All right," just told him to screw off, and then you saw Trudeau, like, just so embarrassed and so humiliated by President Xi Jinping.
Well, in Canada, we're an open society. We don't have secrets. There's some bull honk like that.
I know. You should have seen him walk away after, because President Xi Jinping just left, like, "Yeah, I'm done with this fool." And Trudeau's, like, walking away, just waddling away like a penguin, you know, just all embarrassed and humiliated, like he's got something stuck up his butt.
Xi Jinping walked away, but his translator stayed for like an extra 5 or 10 seconds to make sure that the tongue lashing was complete. It was a good scene. Now Trudeau, you know, he looks like an okay kind of guy, but he was absolutely awful in the Corona apocalypse. I mean, he was just horrible. Who has done these types of things to their own people, forcing everybody to have these so-called vaccines, these actual gene therapies that have, you know, they've had very bad health implications. Maybe not everybody is dying, but some people are dying. It's that, and he's forcing everybody to take it. If you didn't take it, you'd lose your job in Quebec, in the province of Quebec, the second biggest province. If you didn't have the jab, then you couldn't go into a grocery store. You know, you couldn't buy food. It's just horrible. And of course, the Lord closed. You couldn't get in and out.
Yeah, and then when the people protested, you know, the truckers and then the Canadian people, starting with the truckers, yeah, Trudeau declared the, you know, emergency powers, dictatorial, you know, tyrannical powers to crush the protests, to violently crush, and they're still going after them, too. They're trying to seize their bank accounts and, you know, seize their property and all that. So
now, regarding Trudeau, of course, a lot of people would know that his father, Pierre Trudeau, had been the Prime Minister of Canada for quite a long time, from I think 1969 to maybe 1979, with a few months in between where he wasn't Prime Minister. He'd lost an election or something. But so Pierre Trudeau was a big deal. Justin, who's young, I'm not sure what year he was born. He was born in, I don't know if he's 50 yet. He's pretty young, but he's got Pierre's name. I would say he's got his father's name, except there's a little bit of controversy about that. Now, Benjamin Fulford, who's been on my program a few times, he's Canadian, and his father was a big deal in the Canadian Foreign Ministry. His father was a diplomat, and as a matter of fact, his father had been stationed in Cuba, and Benjamin spent his early childhood in Cuba. And so the rumors are that Justin's real father is Fidel Castro. Have you heard this?
Yeah, I've heard that.
Okay. Now, typically, you know, Benjamin says a lot of things like this, and a lot of other people will say things like, oh, Obama's real father was such and such, or Hitler's real father was such and such. And honestly, I think that talk tends to be kind of ridiculous. I mean, how do you know? Really. But in the case of Trudeau, I'm not saying I believe it, but I'm saying I'm a little bit open-minded to it, because it's well known that Margaret Trudeau, who's Justin's mother, it's well known that she was a big slut. She was a giant slut, and she was I think 21 when Pierre married her. Pierre was in his 50s, and he married this young girl, and they had an open marriage. And it was well known that she was cavorting with Mick Jagger of the Rolling Stones. And it is possible. She's known to be close friends with Fidel Castro. Benjamin's parents, I've met Benjamin's parents, and they're somewhat more maybe reliable sources than Benjamin himself. Benjamin's a good guy, but he believes everything he says, but I don't believe everything he says. But you know, it's possible, and you look at the family resemblance, maybe. The key is, Fidel Castro was a hell of a baseball player. He was a really good pitcher, and he should have been drafted. He was drafted by the Washington Senators, but he was cut or something like that. They should have never cut him. They would have had a much better team that way, and probably maybe we would have had a better world. I don't know. But and I look at Castro, at Justin Trudeau, and I don't know if he's got what it takes to be a pitcher. So I'm open. I'm undecided on the paternity question, but I'm just saying that.
I mean, you know, it's definitely possible. I'm not going to say it's not, but at the same time, you know, it's one of them things where you just kind of talk about it, bring it up here and there. Hey, isn't that interesting? That could be the case, and then you move on. It's one of those things.
Well, you know, in this recent midterm.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now, but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. with all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing, knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Are you sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because Big Tech, Big Pharma, and Big Brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we, the people, are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at tlbtalk.com and join the social media revolution.
Definitely possible. I'm not going to say it's not, but at the same time, you know, it's one of the things where you just kind of talk about it, bring it up here and there. Hey, isn't that interesting? That could be the case, and then you move on. It's one of those things.
Well, you know, in this recent midterm election, there was a similar case. The supposedly, allegedly defeated Republican candidate in Nevada for Senate, Adam Laxalt. Mm-hmm. This is not conspiracy stuff. Adam Laxalt, he is the grandson of Senator Paul Laxalt, who had been senator from Nevada for a long time, a very, very, almost a household name back in the 70s and 80s, Paul Laxalt. And that's his grandfather, but it's not Adam's paternal grandfather, it's his maternal grandfather. So Adam Laxalt's mother, had Adam as a single mother, and the paternity was a closely kept secret until a few years ago when it was revealed that Adam's actual father was Senator Pete Domenici. So one of the other Republican senators got Paul Laxalt's daughter knocked up, and then they kept it a secret. So Adam Laxalt was the grandson of Senator Paul Laxalt, but also the illegitimate son of Pete Domenici. So these things can happen. Although in this case, it was, you know, the paternity was always secret. It wasn't as if, you know, there was somebody who is supposedly his father, and no, his real father is actually this. Anyway.
They can, but I prefer to judge somebody by how they currently are, whether their parents are, you know, who are what.
Yeah. So,
whether Trudeau's real father was Pierre Trudeau or Fidel Castro, well, Trudeau's a piece of crap, either way.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, one thing about Fidel Castro, if anything, he was, what's the word for it? He had charisma. He had massive charisma. I don't know if,
mean, he wasn't a fat. He wasn't a fat.
To what extent?
Either, but, anyway, let's move on from this.
Let's move on. Okay. So how about the meeting between Xi Jinping and the Biden? What do we know about that?
So, you know, I mean, I'm not surprised. You know, I would have been surprised if they hadn't met. I mean, it only makes sense. You know, the two most powerful countries in the world, you know, the leader of China and the ruler of the U.S., you know, meeting at the G20 summit, because that's the only place that they get to meet, you know, without having to, you know, schedule anything outside, go out of their way to. So I'm not surprised at all that this meeting took place. I do think that, you know, both sides, they had their reasons for meeting. I think, I guess you want to talk about the U.S. side reasons and then the China side?
Yeah, and I want to know, do you happen to know who else was at the meeting? Who? Because obviously the Biden, he's not going to have much to say by himself.
Well, there was Wang Yi was at the meeting on China's side also, and then I think Tony Blinken was there too. On the U.S. side.
If Wang Yi was there, then one would think that Tony Blinken would be there.
I think he was, yeah, in fact, he was there.
Yeah.
And then you had, you had a couple other, I know I did see Tony Blinken, but I guess let's start with the U.S. side for their reasons for meeting. As you can see, well, here's the thing, though. When people say, like, oh, the U.S. is trying to reason with China, no, that's a bunch of baloney. You know, I've said on the show and I've said elsewhere, you know, the Biden administration is by far the most, number one, most anti-China, most, you know, aggressive toward China administration all of human history. I mean, there's no other administration in the U.S. that even comes close to their, you know, warmongering and, you know, hawkishness against China than the Biden administration. I mean, Biden's regime makes, and when I say Biden, I'm saying it in quotations because we know it's not Biden. It is Biden, but it's the people behind him, because Biden's not all there. You know, he probably doesn't even know where he is half the time. So it's the people behind Biden that are the most, you know, war hawkish against China. It doesn't even come close. So when people are thinking, you know, well, Biden's trying to reason with China, no, that's below me. This is all a stage that the U.S. is trying to put for, I mean, the Biden administration is trying to put for the public back home in the U.S. Because Biden and, you know, the people controlling him, they know he's very unpopular. They know that, you know, most people, whatever Biden does, most people are going to disapprove of because of how bad and unpopular his domestic policies are. But at the same time, they also know that, you know, these Republic cucks, these conservatives of the Republican Party, the GOP, they know that they're very shallow in their thinking, that essentially whatever Biden does, whether, you know, it's good or bad, they'll oppose it no matter what. So, you know, if Biden, let's say he, I don't let's say Biden lowers the gas prices. Of course, I know that he's not really lowering. This is all, you know, this is also fake. But let's say that. Well, they'll oppose that, him doing that anyway. So they know, you know, we just had the election, and I guess the Republicans have taken over the House.
Mm-hmm.
We know that the federal government, the Biden administration, wants a war against China. We know that.
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news. Real talk. Real people. Because you can handle the truth.
Are you one of the millions of people who feel like there is a dark cloud hanging over their heads whenever they're using pharmaceutical drugs? For some, the short-term relief can turn into an opioid addiction nightmare. Have you ever wondered why CBD oil is a billion-dollar industry? It's because it works better than opioids and is actually healthy for you. However, CBD oil is stripped of all other helpful compounds found in the hemp plant. According to neuroscientists, the whole hemp plant, otherwise known as hemp paste, is even more effective than the chemically processed CBD oil. Are you ready to take back your health? You can try hemp paste for the price of a cup of coffee by going to rbnhemppaste.com and ordering a trial pack of happy packets for $5 with free shipping. That's rbnhemppaste.com.
Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we have been building our online store. Well, we have been focusing on bringing you the best talk show host in the country. Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we also want our listeners to have products they can use every day and in times of emergency. We have added new products each week to our store. Your support of this network, plus products at the best prices, is a win-win situation. Check out our new store. Go to our website, republicbroadcasting.org, and click on the online store located at the top of our website. Together, we can continue to grow RBN and help our listeners prepare for the future. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on our online store or call us.
800-724-2719, extension 3. 800-724-2719, extension 3.
Extendivite testimonials on Amazon are very informative. Here's one, RAD. Consistent results when used for heart problems. This product has been a godsend for my father, who suffered a heart attack about 2 years ago. He was prescribed medications for his condition, which was so serious that if he hadn't made it to the hospital in time, he would have died. But he hasn't been able to afford most of the medications. After researching alternatives, he tried Extendivite. While taking Extendivite, he has consistently lower blood pressure and experiences less angina. We are currently on our fifth bottle. I enthusiastically recommend this product, and I am grateful that it is available. To get your Extendivite today, go to Extendivite.com. That's Extendivite.com. Or call us at 1-877-928-8822.
Extend your life with
We know that the federal government, the Biden administration, wants a war against China. We know that simply because China doesn't follow their, you know, New World Order, you know, global homo liberal rules-based order, whatever the hell that even means. You know, like President Putin say, who makes these rules? China doesn't follow them because China is supporting Russia wholeheartedly economically, you know, and keeping their economy up. So we know the U.S. empire under the Biden regime hates China. So why would they want to meet with China? Well, it's because they know that the Republicans, these conservatives, they already see Biden, you know, as a China tool, even though it's the complete opposite. I mean, Biden makes Trump look like a China tool. There, I said it. I'll say it again. Biden makes Trump look like a China tool, being how aggressive he is against China. But the concern, you know, these Republicans, they're so shallow, they just think, oh, yeah, well, Biden's a China tool. So essentially Biden meeting with President Xi, I mean, just immediately after they met, I already saw the headlines of Fox News saying, oh, yeah, Biden, look at him. He's cowering to China. He's you know, groveling before the CCP. And if Biden doesn't stand up to China, then America's doomed and all this crap. And the people who control Biden, they know this. But here's the thing. They need bipartisan support for their war against China. And they know that the Republicans will go along with it when the time comes. If the time, you know, if we ever, you know, granted everything doesn't completely collapse, which would be for the better if it does, But they know that they need Republican support in order to fuel their war against China. So that's why Biden, that was the main reason why Biden did it, was to try to appear to be, you know, very nice toward China, to rile up the people back home to be against China even more. So essentially they're, I don't know what the word for it is, but they're playing the American public and the GOP by doing it. So now let's go on the China side. Why would China, what would be the reasons for President Xi Jinping meeting with Biden? Well, because, and you know, I think this was very wise on China's part to do so, because President Xi Jinping, he wants to show the world that, you know, he's making another attempt to reason with the, I mean, he knows what the Americans are. He's seen, you know, you read Chinese publications, they know that Americans can't be trusted with anything. They know that Americans will break every single one of the treaties or deals that they sign with other countries. They know how rogue the U.S. is, and it can't be trusted, and the U.S. is dangerous. But the thing is, this gives President Xi Jinping the higher ground, the higher moral ground by saying, see, I met with the U.S., I met with these rulers that control the U.S., and I've given them a chance to, you know, try to reason with them, try to negotiate some kind of peace and logic with them. And, you know, therefore they cannot accuse me of being the aggressor because I'm doing my best to try to negotiate with them. So that's why he did it. You know, in a way, it's almost kind of like when, you know, how reasonable, you know, Hitler was in the 1930s when it came to negotiating peace with the West. And yet they refused. And not only that, but they went to war against Germany. I don't think China was going to make the same mistake that Germany did by trusting in the West. Well, I shouldn't say that Hitler trusted in the West. He didn't trust them at all. But I don't think that China is going to be so easy to be walked over like Germany was.
So was there any, do you see any results? Is there anything that comes out of this meeting? Like I wouldn't suppose there's any talk about like a one-on-one summit. Is there any talk of any kind of deal or anything at all coming out of this?
If there is, maybe something temporary, maybe something to kind of cool things down just temporarily. But in comparison with the whole bigger, you know, the grand scope of things, especially of how hostile the American empire has become to China, I don't think it's going to last.
And was there any discussion of Taiwan? Because this is supposedly the big hot button issue for America's Taiwan.
Well, see, the thing is, Biden, he did reiterate, he said that, you know, the U.S. honors the one China policy and we haven't changed our position on Taiwan, and yet Taiwan is a part of China. You know, they said that, but I mean, actions speak louder than words. We already see, you know, the neocons with the, you know, the liberal left warmongers, you know, trying to, you know, poke at China using Taiwan. I mean, with, you know, former Speaker of the House Pelosi, you know, flying there and Biden not stopping her. In fact, you know, somewhat encouraging her to do so. I mean, they could say what they want, and they could say that we honor this and that, but again, their actions speak louder than their words, especially the U.S., I mean, with everything that they've done. So they can keep saying, yeah, we honor the one China policy, but that's not what their actions are showing. Their actions are showing them trying to provoke China using Taiwan.
Okay, hey, while we're on the subject of China, I have a couple of questions. Are there any updates about the zero COVID policy? And, you know, earlier this year, there had been a couple of lockdowns there was a lockdown of Shanghai for a little while and maybe another city. What's going on in the COVID front in China?
I haven't really heard anything, not really much about the COVID stuff.
It's been pretty quiet.
Yeah, they haven't really said anything. I mean, there's some places that are probably stricter than others, you know, kind of like in the U.S., you got certain states that are more strict than others. I'm sure in China, you know, certain provinces are more strict than others.
And then also, this is a different subject, but Dr. Duke had sent me a video, and I can't even remember who it was. There's somebody whom I'd heard of before.
Is it the guy that lives in Thailand, the New Atlas guy?
I think it was, yeah, and it was about
Dr. Duke sent me that same, he sent that video to me also. Yeah, I mean, basically debunking how the whole, you know, China social credit score, thinking it's the central, you know, when it's not.
So there is no central, there is no central social credit score. That's a myth.
Yeah, that's a myth. It's a very decentralized.
There are various rating systems here and there, and we have rating systems here. We have a credit rating. You have FICO. Everybody has a FICO score.
Well, it's like you want to go on to, or no, you know, even if, you know, some kind of social credit, let's say there's a business, you know, a restaurant you want to go eat at. I mean, you're going to check the reviews of the restaurant. I mean, to see if it's any good or not. That's a second social credit score.
Reputation. Hey, you know, if you look up, if you just Google or Bing or whatever, any given person's name, you're going to find some websites. One, Spokio, another is White Pages, but Spokio, I think that's what it's called, Spokio. Whenever I'm Googling just an individual's names, that tends to come up, and it'll have it might have part of their address, and if you want more information, you pay, you know, you can subscribe or pay $10, and maybe you can get their birthday and some other stuff. But they have what they call a reputation score. So Spokio has this; it's a reputation score, and some, you know, it's 1 to 0 to 5, and. You know, have, and Spokio, at least they claim to know whether people have police records and things like that. So all that the social credit score that we've been hearing about, all that's behind that is just there's a variety of things that are analogous to what we already have in the United States. We have credit ratings. That's a big one. If you're going to borrow money, well, you have a credit rating. There's a few different credit rating agencies, and they give you a credit rating. And if you have a low credit rating, then you're going to not get the loan, or you're going to pay a higher interest rate. And then, so you got a reputation score through Spokio. How important is it? It's probably not very important at all, but it's out there. And, you know, there's other things. So the conclusion that the New Atlas guy came up with was all this talk about China's social credit. The social credit rating is really a myth.
It's made up in the heads of Western media propagandists and talking liars. That's what it is. The China social credit score that we hear about all the time in the Western media only comes from the Western media. That's it. It doesn't exist except in the heads of Western liberals.
And you know, we've been hearing about this for a few years, and it's really not a real thing. There are a variety of reputation scores, credit scores, the same type of thing that we have here or that exists in a whole bunch of other countries. There's no centralized social credit score. And, you know, if you have you can get banned from airlines, right? If you cause a lot of trouble on an airplane, you'll get kicked off the airplane, right?
Yeah.
And you're not let back on. And so they have the same type of thing in China. If you cause a ruckus on a train, you're not coming back on. That doesn't mean that if you don't obey the CCP's political edicts, then you're not allowed to travel. That was never the case, right?
And no such thing, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
No, but here's the thing. If you disobey the U.S. federal government under the Jewish Biden administration, then yeah, you'll be banned from flying.
True. Nick Fuentes. Yeah, we have a no-fly list here. So, okay, we have a no-fly list here. All right. Well, this is important to unravel these things, because there's just an awful lot of mythology, and not very many people have been to China. I've been there, but it was so long ago. And, you know, I wasn't always able to travel.
It was a way different, completely different China.
A way different thing. You know, it was a different part of the difference was that nothing was computerized. You just walked up to the ticket window and I'd say I want a hard seat to Chongqing, and they'd say mayo. And I'd say, what do you mean mayo? And then, you know, if I stood there long enough, maybe I remember in one case I was there trying to argue. And of course I didn't speak Chinese very well, but I'm trying to, you know, write some characters. And there was this army guy, a young army soldier who was on duty, a military police or something, And all of a sudden, he just started laughing, and he said a few things to the lady behind the ticket window, and all of a sudden, she produced a ticket. But, you know, that's not unique to China. I had the same types of things happen in Greece and, you know, other places. So.
Yeah, the U.S., if you go to, like, an Amtrak or a Greyhound bus station, you know, God forbid anybody go on a Greyhound, but filled with a bunch of blacks is what I heard. But it's like you'll probably get, you know, the same if not even worse response. And, you know, that's granted that, you know, you can last to the Greyhound station for 5 minutes without being shot or something. Who knows?
Yeah, I had some experiences in Greyhound stations. I took a Greyhound twice, coast to coast. Twice.
It was probably a lot safer when you took it, though, than now.
It could have been worse. Could have been worse. You know, there were a lot of blacks. I took Amtrak coast to coast once. Amtrak I preferred. It was pretty nice. Mm-hmm. Well, okay, so we've just got a few minutes left. One of the things I mentioned before we started recording was former Japanese Prime Minister Yoshihiro Mori. He has come out and publicly said, "What's up with Zelensky? Why doesn't anybody blame him for what's going on? He's just throwing away the lives of his countrymen. There's something wrong here." Mori is an old guy. He's got to be in his 80s. He was Prime Minister for 1 year. From 2000 to 2001. I can't remember what it was that led to his downfall. It doesn't have to be much. They don't have a very stable political leadership in Japan. But he's always been around. He's always had a voice. He's somebody who does what the Japanese call problem statements. He'll say things. He doesn't have the best filter. And so he'll say things that are true. You know, he might say things about women. He might say things about Ukraine. And it was a very welcome statement. The thing is, the current prime minister, Kishida, who was at the G20, Kishida, this is what I heard. The speech he delivered at the G20, he delivered it in before the Biden had his speech. And people were said, that sounds like that speech that Kishida delivered was written by the State Department, the U.S. State Department.
You know, I mean, Kishida does strike me as kind of a tool of the U.S., you know, federal government, the U.S., you know, shadow.
He's completely a tool. There are very few independent thinkers in Japan. There is a lady who has been in the cabinet. She's not in the cabinet now, Seiko Noda. She's an independent thinker. She might be prime minister someday if Japan is lucky. We'll see.
We shall see.
But that was, you know, that got me thinking. Japan has, over the past 50 years, it's only had three people who have even managed to be prime minister for 5 years, right? Only three. And after that, they're lucky to last 2 years. Right, they've only three prime ministers have lasted 3 years, let alone five. And so you've got this revolving door at the top with just those three exceptions. You've got this revolving door where every year or two you're getting a new prime minister. And it seems to me, and almost all from the same party, you've had two brief periods of time where the Liberal Democrat Party was out of power, just a couple of very brief periods. So you have the same party. And what this means is, effectively, you've got this amorphous establishment with the bureaucracy being very, very important, and they're running things, and the bureaucracy is very, you know, bureaucracies in general are very resistant to change. And so the Japanese system is very stagnant, and it's very difficult to change things, whether you're talking foreign policy, whether you're talking about finance or economic policy. Hey, this way. And by contrast, you got a country like China, or you could say the same thing with Russia. China has strong leadership, and especially now, even more than Hu Jintao or who were probably, you know, much stronger leaders than any of the Japanese prime ministers. But Xi Jinping is a very strong leader, and when you have that kind of stability at the top, you can have a more dynamic leadership where things you can implement change. Implement change from within a ruling party. You don't have to have these different parties coming in and creating a lot of chaos in order to get change. You can have kind of an orderly change. That was my thought. What do you think about that?
Well, it's just like what the Chinese patriotic businessman Eric Li said in front of a Western audience. He said that in China, you cannot change the party, but you can change the policy. Whereas in the U.S. and in the West, and, you know, for argument's sake, that includes Japan. Japan is not a Western country, but has a Western system.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Tune in Saturday mornings, 8 to 10 Central, to the Alternative Media with your host, Farron. If you've not been listening, this is some of what you've been missing.
2,000 mules, like you like to say occasionally, Farron, in your face.
They might have a set of lactating mammaries available that could provide milk for their adopted children.
Complicit news media, all pulling off this gigantic fraud.
Rhino, neocon, cucks.
There's this wonderful thing called Vote With Your Feet. Move to California.
I am a conspiracy factualist, and everyone else is a reality theorist.
Hundreds, if not thousands, of ships came out of nowhere.
Give me liberty, or let's give you death.
Any excuse to go and kill yourself for this fraud of a government. This goes back 100 years.
When they come for your gold, give them a lead. And when they come for your guns, give them the bullets first. And God help us all.
Did you know that essential oils have had a multitude of natural health and skin uses in history, but have been somewhat forgotten by recent civilization? Susanna's Secret offers 100% pure natural oils at prices you can actually afford. Do you have a house or office with a musty smell or mold? Studies have shown that essential oils like the one in our Thief and Robbers blend will kill or inhibit mold, viruses, bacteria, and fungus. Just diffuse with it, and you will see the long-lasting effects that even synthetic chemicals don't achieve. Purifica, another one of our products used to clean and freshen your house or give a natural scent when drying laundry. For that special lady, we offer a ginger argan oil in a beautiful cosmetic bottle, or a pure argan oil, a natural acne-fighting product. Check us out at SusannaSecret.com. That's S-U-S-A-N-A-S Secret.com. S-U-S-A-N-A-S Secret.com.
China, you cannot change the party, but you can change the policy. Whereas in the U.S. and in the West, and, you know, for argument's sake, that includes Japan. Japan is not a Western country, but has a Western system. You can change the party, but you can never change the policy. And he's right. I mean, you look at the different governments of the world. China has, you know, Chinese government has by far been the one government that's tried many different policies, and all these policies are to work for the betterment of their nation, of China. Whereas, you know, you look at the U.S., yeah, two party, you know, essentially a you know, one party with two sub parties, you know, just this seesaw going back and forth. Nothing ever, the policy is always downhill. But, you know, you can elect Republicans. If they don't work out, elect the Democrats next time. If they don't work out, elect the Republicans. But it's still – the policy keeps going downhill. Whereas in China, it's fixed. The party is fixed. But the policies that they implement, if it doesn't work, they'll scrap it and try another policy. And they'll keep trying until it works, and it has worked. So
a lot of people on RBN will say that the Republicans are permanent losers. The Democrats always get their way, and the Republicans – just maybe slow things down. But I always push back at that, because the Democrats get what they want, provided what they want is on the Jewish agenda. Basically, that's it.
Well, that's the thing. It's all about Jewish power, because China is a nation with its own sovereignty and its own destiny. The U.S. and the West at large is not. It's Judeo, you know, liberal democracy.
When you look at the belligerent foreign policy, permanent war, right? The war on terror. You look at the Patriot Act, for instance. The opposition to the Patriot Act was from Democrats. The opposition to the permanent war on terror, the war in Iraq, it was from Democrats. And what did Democrats do? Democrats caved and caved and caved until they became the war party.
Yeah, now they're the warmongers. Yeah.
Yeah, but they caved and caved. So I've seen it. You know, it works both ways. The Republicans got their way on wars. They got their way on massive military spending. They got their way on the Patriot Act. And really, the initial giant crackdown on, the post 9/11 crackdown on civil liberties, the Republicans got their way because that was, and the Democrats gave way because that was the Jewish agenda.
Well, it's kind of reminds me of that meme, you know, with that liberal leftist snowflake when Trump was in power. That snowflake was, oh my goodness, Trump's going to start World War III. And now that Trump's out of power and the liberal left Democrats are in, we need to start a nuclear war to force gay anal values on Russia.
Okay. Yeah. Hey, we only have like three or four seconds left. Just quickly, are you on the Trump train or the Kanye convoy or something else?
Well, I mean, I'm on the train that's not gonna derail and get us all destroyed. That's the train I'm on. We'll have to see what happens in that. But
you have the hard seat. You have the hard seat on the train to Chongqing.
Yeah, I'll take that seat. The train back to my ancestral homeland in China. Yeah, but you know, with all this said, with all the turmoil and chaos out there, I just still want to wish everyone a happy Thanksgiving, and you know, please do spend time with your family and friends. You don't know how long you have them for, so you know, please take this Thanksgiving to spend time with your loved ones. So
happy Thanksgiving. And America's actually a very, very nice place. It's just a shame what's happening to it, right? I think we can agree on that.
Yeah,
nice place, nice people, but it's horrible what's happening to it, and that's why we get so upset.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, well, thank you for joining me, Cato.
Thank you, and once again, happy Thanksgiving.
And I'll be back again next time with another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network.
because you can handle the truth.